The work that's on show here at Salama Caro is different from the last show here in that it's actually physical collages rather than screened images of collage onto canvas. Is there any one particular thing which you're interested in making that shift now?
It's not really a shift in the sense that I've always produced collages from the very beginning, from the late 60s. And that's been a continuous activity over the years. However, in the late 70s, I felt the need to enlarge the collages, and the silt screen process was the solution to that. And in the end, now I have a stack of screens, just as I have a kind of library of images that I use, and it is a collage process, but on a larger scale. There is a difference, yes, between the most recent work and the last work I showed here in London, in as much as I mean it's a shift from black and white into colour. But that's also a move that I've made on the large scale as well. There is a tendency for the collages to be a couple of years ahead of what I'm working on a large scale. There is a necessary process, I think, of assimilation and absorption of the discoveries I make firsthand in the process of collage that takes time to feed back into the large-scale work. So there is a discrepancy on that level. I mean, I wouldn't want to leave the impression that the new work was in some way a move away from things that I've been involved with in the last set of work.
So these two things go on in parallel all the time. There is the small-scale collage work, and then there's the larger-scale screening as well. Is there some sense, then, in which the collages act as kind of sketch material or preparatory material for this larger work?
Yes, that's true. Collage, as I say, has always been a continuous activity, but the way that I see the collage has changed at any given point in time. At certain periods, the collage does take on that status of being a drawing or a sketch. And in the end, actually, I think that I've always been more comfortable in that sort of sketch activity. Even from the early days of college, from drawing, I preferred drawing to painting. Painting always was something I had to sort of in some way get myself together to do, rather than drawing, which seemed very immediate. And I feel the same about collage. It is the most immediate expression. A collage produces multiplicity. And I think that's only half of the problem for me. The problem, once having arrived at multiplicity, is how to focus and achieve unity, or singularity, you might say. So I'm really looking for the one image, even though I'm actually confronting plurality the whole time. I mean, that's the whole basis of collage activity, as I see it. We live in a world of images, a world of multiplicity and fragmentation. And it's something to do with trying to find a way of achieving, I don't know how to put it into words exactly, a kind of unity, a kind of sense of singularity of that image.
Is there something there too of the reason why you moved into collage in the first place, that if you had, say, kept with drawing, that you wouldn't have been able to move into this field of plurality, of multiplicity, before returning to the singularity? You would simply have kept in a rather different kind of singular activity with drawing.
I think that collage succeeded drawing for me as a kind of primary obsession, a primary activity that is ongoing. But it was a move into another field altogether, and it was a very exciting move. I mean, it was actually inspired by coming across a book by Max Ernst, Samander Bonte. The Week of Good Luck, I think, is a very good title. You know, the luck of finding was a very exhilarating thing. It's very different from drawing, really. But I think it shares something of the same immediacy and spontaneity.
Do you think of there being close similarities between the kind of things you're doing with your own collage and Ernst and other surrealist collages?
Periodically, I come back to that source. I wouldn't say that I was perpetually inspired by Ernst. I mean, if I had to choose anybody, it would probably be Joseph Cornell, and I wouldn't really call him a surrealist. But on the other hand, yes, I keep coming back to those sources in surrealism. I mean, I haven't ever used juxtaposition quite so overtly, and I feel quite free to do so. I don't feel that the surrealist tradition is any kind of impediment. Collage in some way must be always an attestation to that freedom, to be able to do what you like with images.
The way that the exhibition has been laid out, one starts to think that maybe these things are done as groups. For example, there are some in which you're using what appear to be publicity stills of Hollywood stars, 50s images. There are ones in which you're using older health and efficiency kinds of images, ones where you're using film stills, some where you're using illustrations from children's books. Do you work within a set of images through as many possibilities as you can before moving on to another?
Yeah, that's exactly the process of working. I mean, I collect, as you can imagine, I have an enormous picture library, which I'm constantly depleting and adding to. But in the end, they tend to focus upon a particular period. I mean, you're right to talk about the 50s, 60s, it's early 60s, late 50s kind of period. And almost all my imagery does come from that particular period. Some slightly earlier, some slightly later, but in general there's a gravitation towards that particular period. I'm not quite certain why. In a way, there's a sort of innocence about those post-war consumer images of one kind or another, whether they're recording the natural world or whether they're publicity stills for the new Technicolor cinema, or whether they're the childhood myth that I myself would have been brought up with via encyclopedias, the age of science, progress, the modern world. I think I'm trying to touch on a sort of lost utopianism, in a way, of that particular period. I think there is a nostalgic element in... it's not something I want in my work, but I think that it's something I've had to confront, that I do tend to gravitate towards that. Although I think it's also quite a fearful world, that world of the 50s, 60s. There's a sort of underlying feeling of menace within it. The opened-up world of science is also a very frightening one.
You have used blackness, the idea of a void, quite often in your work. None of the work here uses that. Is there some program that's being used here?
The idea of the void, as you've pointed out, has always been sort of central to my work, quite often literally central. As a matter of fact, I always used to think of my work as being in some way in opposition to surrealism because it was... in some way a depletion of the image, a removal, an absence that became the focal point. And that if anything, I was fragmenting things, isolating things, rather than bringing together worlds. I suppose in recent years the void has become occupied, you might say. I still think of it as a void, but I feel as though one's almost locked between worlds within the collages now. There is no escape route. There's no point at which one can find rest within the visual void. Or the blackness or the shadow or whatever. I don't know whether you could say it's a program. Certainly it's not a program I'm consciously aware of, but it's something that has happened. I find it impossible now to use those devices.
Is there a connection between what you've just been saying about childhood and innocence and so on and this void? There's one series here, for example, in which the silhouette that's being used is in fact of an urn rather than another figure. And there seems to be some play on an image like Ingres' La Source, the idea of an origin, also the fact that on one or two of them, the central image within the urn shape is that of a doll. There seems to be a much broader sense in which you're not just dealing with your own childhood, perhaps, but childhood as an origin itself. Is this absence perhaps also the fact that that origin is unapprehendable in some quite important way?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I feel about the work. The Vase series is a series now that I've been working on for over 10 years. The departure point for it was not Ingres, actually, but Piranesi, his Vacheri series, which is where I started really with the silhouette vase, and I've imposed it on various forms of imagery over the years. The latest ones, I'm making connections to things like The Source and elements of neoclassicism as well, which has fascinated me in recent years. The major point you were making is correct, that they are about origination in one way or another. I think it's something that I do unconsciously, not particularly consciously. I do teach art history, and so I'm aware of many of the sources of the images that come up in my work, but it's still a surprise when they come up. It's not something planned or programmatic. I've become much more open in recent years to the idea that art can be regressive, not as some sort of postmodernist opposition to progressiveness or modernism in that sense, but more that all art, in a sense, is looking for roots, for origins, even if one's only reflecting on the absence of those origins, if that is the anxiety in the work. In a certain sense, the kinds of states of mind one enters into in the process of collage, reverie, dream, half-dream worlds, seems to be a point at which forms of origin intermingle. Childhood recollections, remembrances of particular kinds of imagery resonate with aspects of art history itself, another sense of origination. I think this is an inevitable part, perhaps an overlooked part of the whole of art history, really.
I can remember myself at the beginning of the 60s feeling very much this sense of progress, which one doesn't feel so much nowadays, with things like the first manned spaceflight and so on. Is there also perhaps some tie in there with the kind of material you're using? Yes. The fact that actually represents a period in which those things were graspable intellectually for us.
Whatever one thinks about the late 50s, early 60s, it's left us with a wonderful repository of myths, which is perhaps what I'm exploring. They seem archaic and antiquated now. Robert Harbison has a beautiful word for it. It represents a smaller and simpler world, perhaps a world that one identifies with one's own childhood, like a world of play. One of the essential elements of collage as a process is that it is rather like a children's game. I even actually tend to work on the floor. I'm always reminded of this. It always puts any sense of seriousness in my work in perspective. I think ideally art has to have that simplicity of play.
Some of the images you use are film stills, something which Brian Hatton mentioned in one of the pieces he wrote about you, was that in some ways film stills work in a way entirely unlike any other kind of photograph. They're almost like paintings in that every aspect of them is designed, is positioned.
That was what originally drew me to film images, is that they were kind of the equivalent to neoclassical paintings, in a way, very staged things. They weren't moments from film. In fact, the moment that the cinema started to use single frames from the film itself is actually the moment historically where I can no longer use film stills. I can only use film stills from a particular period where they were actually staged to represent an entire scene, which probably very often never actually occurred in the film at all, in which all the characters are often in the same place all at once. That was exactly the fascination with them, that they were completely false worlds, essentially, and yet real in the sense that they were photographic. It's rather similar attitude to the nudist images I used a little later in the late 70s. I felt in a similar way that they represented something kind of mythological, like the nude in the landscape. But they were, if you like, the last stopping point within that tradition of nude in landscape. It has a similar kind of sense of a kind of strange combination between the mythic and the real. And the same with film stills, in a sense, that there is something both mythic and real about them.
What's the relationship between the collaged image and any title that you will give to?
Titles are important for me, though I don't always use them. Many of my works are untitled. But when a title occurs to me in the process of working, it tends to stick. It's my way of reminding myself of individuating individual pieces. Obviously, that's one important function of titles. but also of in some way saying what it is one is meant to be looking at when one looks at a piece. Very often I've co-opted other people's titles. That's my favourite technique. The Vase series, which is an almost continuous series over the last 10 years, comes from Piranesi's vases. I've been working on a series called Inside the Egg for almost as long. Some of the inside the egg pieces are up on show here, and that is a title I took from Max Ernst. So that's also a way of making a multiple reference, obviously, and if you like, covering myself for whatever stylistic pillaging I'm doing at the time.
The Inside the Egg series are the ones which have a silhouette which is blob-like in the way that albumen would be blob-like when you opened an egg.
That's correct, yes. There is an amoeba series as well. Amoeba is a wonderful word. I looked it up in a children's dictionary whilst working on the series, and it said that amoeba was either Greek or Latin, I can't remember, it must be Greek, for ghost-like. And in a way, this was perfect for me, the idea of the ghost-like creature. And I've been reading a wonderful story by Calvino, well, it's not a story, actually, an essay called Mitosis, which is the technical word for the splitting of a cell. And the whole story is told in the first person singular by the splitting amoeba. This fascinated me, and this is absolutely a total embodiment of what my work is attempting to do in some way.
So science is not specifically of interest because of its scientific nature, more because of the kinds of paradigms which allow us to picture the world in various kinds of metaphorical guises to ourselves.
Absolutely, yes. Many of the components of these collages come from children's encyclopedias, which are explaining this new scientific world to a 50s, 60s child. And in a way, they reveal a great deal about what one might call the mythic world we inhabit. Somehow that's shown up more interestingly in theories that have become redundant. What is meant to be encountered as an opening, I suppose, becomes a form of closure. But within that closure of the image, there is the possibility then of fascination.
To what extent do you see the images as whole, as complete, when you finish them? Or conversely, to what extent is disjuncture within them an important factor?
That's a very difficult question to answer, because one feels almost the point at which a piece is resolved is I both feel that it's a moment at which I've brought them to rest, these images that are in circulation, in movement, that exist in relationship to a number of other similar images, exist within certain horizons of dynamic movement, image turnover and all the rest of it. On the one hand, I feel I'm bringing them to rest. What that means, I don't know exactly, but that is a feeling I have when I've completed a work. On the other hand, it's also a point at which the image is released from its individuality and seems to become in some ways dynamic, incessant almost, or there's a feeling of incessance in it. So I don't know, it's a combination of the two really, disjunction, conjunction, dynamism, stasis. I don't know how you would describe. It's a moment and yet also not a moment. It does fascinate me trying to put into words this particular feeling, because it occurs whenever I encounter an image that I know I want to have within my collection. I obviously spend a good deal of my time wandering around second-hand shops looking for books. But there is a moment when I often feel it's best described by the phrase, the image finds me, rather than I find the image. There is something that happens when I see an image that I know has to be in my work. It's the point at which I have transcended the search, so to speak. I may be, for example, looking for a particular kind of image, but very rarely do I find images by that process. The finding is an interruption of that process, a diversion. I'm looking for an image of a train and I find an image of a parrot, or whatever. I think the only person who's really been able to put that kind of sense of the image as fascination into words is the French writer Maurice Blanchot. His essays, I think, come the closest to saying something about that interrelated feeling of the dynamism and the stasis of an image. He refers to the incessance of an image being somehow the inscription of the infinity of the image, the infinity on the image, the moment that the particularity of the image opens up a sense of the infinite. He uses the term the incessant, but he's thinking in literary terms. I think his analogy between the idea of the image and the corpse is one that interests me. In a certain sense, the images that I'm collecting are the corpses of past meanings, which I'm resurrecting in a particular way to a new kind of life, an aesthetic life, you might say, or one in which what was hidden, the mythology of the image, suddenly is revealed. And it's something like that idea of the found image for me, that outside the context in which it's designed to be encountered, it can reveal something of what it is. What was invisible, if you like, within a culture of images, and almost everything is invisible in a culture of images, holds this possibility of a revelation of visibility in a second order of life.
Your references are literary, mythical, art historical, poetic. Do you feel yourself to be working in relation to other contemporary artists, or is that a kind of red herring?
I don't really know. I've had moments where I felt I've been involved in what one might call tendency or movement. In the late 70s, I felt quite close to some of my contemporaries in New York, what was going on there. But prior to that, in the 10 years of working with collages and the sort of work I've been involved with throughout, I felt very isolated, especially in England. I didn't feel there was anybody here that I could really relate to. And I suppose since the late 70s, early 80s, with my very brief encounter with New York, I felt once again that I'd been gone along in total isolation. I tend to live quite a lot of my so-called career in isolation from any kind of mainstream activity. And to be honest, I like very little contemporary art. In fact, I like very little art of the 20th century. Joseph Cornell is probably about the only 20th century artist I keep going back to look at. But the late 19th century symbolists are people I feel close to in spirit.
Why is that?
I suppose it's a fin de siècle atmosphere of late 19th century that brings about a similar set of preoccupations. I don't think you could exactly call it a psychoanalytical preoccupation, but one that is clearly sees art as a psychological act of some kind, and one which is attempting to bridge worlds, really, in a similar way to the symbolists. They could see the world of the future, the modern world that opened up in the 20th century, and they had a sense of the past, and both seemed irretrievably lost, and there was this almost neurotic desire to find a bridge between those worlds. And I feel that's quite similar. We're leaving the age of mechanism in a certain sense. We're entering, well, we've entered the age of electronics. And in a similar way, I feel that my work is attempting to make a bridge between the mythic universes that are embodied in both of those two worlds. Concretely, I've been very influenced by Redon in particular, who has similarly worked for most of his life in black and white and in a graphic medium. You could call collage a kind of graphic medium. And I prefer Redon to what the Surrealists did with Redon later, in a way, because they are not purely psychoanalytical ciphers in the sense that Surrealist art saw itself. With Redon, there is still that sense of a universality and a relating to a kind of a literary and mythological tradition.
I would say that about your work too. I mean, much of the imagery, although one is aware that one could apply standard psychoanalytical terminology to its usage. I mean, you see a moon, you see a train, you see some sea, you can think of it in almost Freudian terms. There always seems to be some other way in which it's going beyond that. It's not just there because it is acting as that kind of cipher.
Yes, that's true. And of course, I live at the end of the century in which collage activity has not exactly been an exception. I mean, there's one way in which you can see the whole of modern art as being essentially to do with collage. And so, of course, I'm if I put a train in, I cannot escape the reference to a whole lot of other things apart from what Freud might make of trains in dreams. I'm referring to almost the stereotype of the dream image as received through Magritte. So it's incredibly complex. What I rather like, it actually, is those layerings of meanings within a given image, so that a simple image of a train in an appropriate position on a film still can take you back first to Magritte or Psycho, Hitchcock, a sort of series of multiple references around a single image. I suppose the difference between myself and the Surrealists is their interest was the idea of a juxtaposition in a certain sense, which would bring the train into an unusual relationship with the world, like coming out of a fireplace or whatever. My interest is the strangeness of that image of the train and its resonances historically. What it is, that a steam train, and of course the fact that they no longer exist well, not in England anyway, not in use, is also another aspect to it. And it fascinates me, for example, why children continue to draw trains with steam coming out of them. And, I mean, there is something about the image that has transcended its original use, and it's those moments at which an image has that quality that I find them fascinating. They're a mystery, a perplexing mystery in themselves. And what I find paradoxical about Surrealist art is how stereotyped the imagery of an inner life tends to be. So on the one hand, the Surrealists seem to believe that the process of collage could throw light upon the individual psyche. And on the other hand, they only ever seem to get to the point where they were manifesting that fact rather than actually using the imagery. I think there is an exception in Joseph Cornell, and I think that's probably why it's difficult to even associate him with Surrealism, because he actually is, in Salvador Dali's own terms, more Surrealist than the Surrealists. He is somebody who actually went through the process of that form of cohabitation with images that would make the general configuration of his works a sort of mental map of some kind. He was the only one who took that idea seriously, it seemed to me. For people like Max Ernst, it was almost like a kind of rather medical approach, manifesting that kind of hypothesis, you might say, almost in a scientific sense. For my own work, I feel closer to Cornell because, on the one hand, I do feel that my works are personal psychological ciphers, but what is revealed to me through the collage is, if you like, a sort of transpersonal entity. And again, that's where I feel close to Cornell. I don't so much feel as though I'm, in the end, expressing an individual psyche, as in some way trying to put my finger on a sort of collectivized psychology.
Would some of this have to do with the fact that the notion of automatism is inherently disingenuous?
The use of chance to reveal the slip, the Freudian slip, or however one connects it, is, I think, very important, and it is a very important trigger within my work, as much as it is in most collagist work. The point at which I feel as though I've expressed something that is important to myself is the moment at which I'm aware that I'm expressing something universal rather than something private. And I think in the end my works are attempts at a sort of configuration of a post-war 20th century consumer culture psyche rather than an individual. Something transpersonal seems to be involved. Lots of people try to put, you know, say what that is. I mean, William Burroughs, again, who I don't rate as a great collagist, either pictorial or literary, but he did in his book The Third Mind begin to touch on that reality, the idea of the, you know, the use of two different literary sources to create a third mind. And that, I think, is very much part of what I'm involved with. I am using others, the images of others, and somehow in the middle there is a kind of mind that represents the bridge between the world of those images, because we all exist in that state between worlds, between worlds of images and between images of worlds and so on. I see my work as a kind of healing in some ways too, a sort of psychic healing. I think we live in a fragmented and fractured world, and one which whose momentum perpetually evades any unified grasp of cosmos, of world. And I think that you might say collage can be a sort of rearguard action or something which is trying to pull back that incessant momentum into the revelation of cosmos, of world.
Would then part of your dissatisfaction with much contemporary art be that it tends to be doing or working on the same kind of level as you're saying the surrealists did, which is that it gets as far as saying we live in a fragmented and fractured world, but really performs none of that kind of healing activity?
Absolutely. I think there was something very interesting that happened in the late 70s. I mean, in America they called it New Image, and we didn't really have a word for it in this country, although I happen to believe that the whole movement began here. And it was a sort of new awareness of image. But in the end, it ended up being a celebration of the rootlessness of our image culture, rather than any attempt to look for, if you like, the underlying cosmos that generates those images. One might say, although I'm not a Jungian, that there has been too much celebration of the stereotype in contemporary art and the rootlessness of imagery. And I see my work as a pursuit of the archetypal underpinnings of those stereotypes. And rather than, there's also the sort of demystificatory, deconstructive activities that go on around stereotypes, which I'm equally opposed to. I've always seen stereotypes as things that one should try and hold on to. They are, if you like, the figures of our culture, the fixed figures by which we live. And they tend to be rendered transparent or invisible through multiplicity. For me, the stereotype is a cipher of a collectivized psychological state of some kind. They're the heraldry of our culture in a way, and I'm interested in trying to pin them down as I find them existing in myself. And that seems to involve something akin to the pursuit of an archetypal image. I mean, the archetype is something that is perpetually evasive, but I do believe there is a fundamental configuration of images which is at the roots of our culture, and my work is in some way an interrogation of those, one might say.
So art for you ought to be a slow process, an attempt to reach some kind of image through aping a speed of society, the fragmentation of society, is always doomed to failure.
I think it seems to profess failure as being its form of success in a way. I'm just bored by late modernism, postmodernism, and the incessant sort of end game it sets up within art activity. I feel this has been the most fundamental depletion of the imaginary that's occurred within art in the last 20, 30 years.
Do you find the same goes for the theorists upon whom many of these artists would hang their work?
I have a different reading, for example, of Baudrillard from perhaps most kind of postmodernist thinkers. But yes, I feel there is a similar kind of endgame being played philosophically and within critical circles. And it just seems very, very desperate, very limited. In fact, collage was my first way of stepping outside of all that. It was a way of producing art for me which actually, literally, stepped aside from the reductionistic process of modernist programmatic activity. I tend to identify with the sort of rear guard action groups within these the sort of oases.
Yeah, I was just thinking of those essays which Fuller wrote in the 70s and early 80s, using the term kenosis, that idea of emptying out. So there does seem to be some kind of connection there with what you're saying.
We knew one another in the early days, and I actually met him just a few days before his death. It's strange, actually, that we've always been assumed to be opponents. I mean, he's been very critical of my work in the past. But in fact, we share a great deal more than most people would imagine. Though his choice of artists, with whom he feels there is this kind of resistance movement against modernism, I can't identify with that. Not wholly, though. I'm very interested in some of the same artists. I mean, Stanley Spencer, for example. Somebody I love. I think I felt that from the time I started at the Slade, really. I was equally fascinated in worlds that you weren't allowed to mix. I mean, how could you possibly like Francis Bacon and, consider yourself to be an ongoing, young generation artist? It seemed impossible. And yet that really was what I saw as my program. If I have a program at all, it was really to try and bring those worlds back together again in some way.
Thank you.
Thank you.